WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. The FBI is investigating a shooting at Old Dominion University that killed one victim as an act of terrorism. The public is invited to view presentations by the top contenders competing to recast the bronze from Charlottesville's removed Robert E. Lee statue. And Harrisonburg's Planning Commission approves a controversial multi-story apartment complex planned for downtown. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, March 13th. One person is dead and two others are hospitalized after a shooting Thursday morning at Old Dominion University in Norfolk. The FBI is investigating the shooting as an act of terrorism. Officials identified the shooter as Mohammed Jalla, a former Army National Guardsman who pleaded guilty to plotting a terrorist attack on U.S. soil. He was released from federal prison in 2024. ODU police say Jalla killed one person and injured two others at Constant Hall, which houses ODU's School of Business. The victim who was killed was identified as Lieutenant Colonel Brandon A. Shaw, a professor at ODU. The U.S. Army Cadet Command said that two victims were members of the university's ROTC program. The Virginian Pilot reports that several students jumped Jalla and managed to disarm him before killing him. Police say they found the gunman dead on the scene when they arrived. Classes at ODU are canceled for today as police continue to investigate. The public is invited to view presentations by the top contenders vying to recast the bronze from Charlottesville's removed Robert E. Lee statue. The event will be held at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center Saturday at 6 p.m. The top three design firms were chosen from among 32 applicants. It's part of the Swords into Plowshares project, which aims to remake the former Lee statue, which was removed in 2021. Never-before-seen photos that captured the dismantling and melting of the Lee statue will be on display at the center until the end of May. The Harrisonburg Planning Commission voted 5-1 Wednesday night to recommend that the City Council approve The Link. That's a controversial multi-story apartment complex planned for downtown. WMRA's Bridget Manley has the details.
All right, then, I guess roll call vote, please.
Vice Chair Porter.
No.
Commissioner Seitz.
Yes.
Commissioner Kettler.
Aye.
Councilmember Den.
Aye.
Commissioner Jezior.
Aye.
Chair Baugh.
Aye. So this goes forward to City Council with a non-unanimous favorable recommendation on April 14th.
The development, which is proposed to be built on 10 parcels between South Main and South Liberty Streets near City Hall, would sit very close to the heart of downtown Harrisonburg, where the current Lindsay Funeral Home is located. Commissioner Shannon Porter voted against the recommendation, citing concerns about the building's management plan and wanting a greater investment in affordability. Last August, after a lengthy public meeting where comments extended past midnight, the Harrisonburg City Council postponed their decision on the project for 6 weeks to gather more information. Afterwards, the city had to restart the entire process because it failed to publish the public notice in a newspaper in July as legally required. The city needs to change the property zoning designation from R3, which only allows three-story buildings, to B1C zoning, which permits a higher density, mixed use, and taller development. The project's developers returned with several changes to their original plan, including lowering the density from 265 units to 250, contributing $93,000 to Harrisonburg's Affordable Housing Fund, and designing a, quote, smaller, less imposing building. They did not, however, reduce the number of floors the building would have. They still propose a six-story building. Todd Ray, the attorney with Clark and Bradshaw representing the developers, said the link would align with the city's 2040 comprehensive plan by capitalizing on underused space for mixed use and residential developments.
An overarching goal of the 2040 plan is the pressing need to increase population density in the city center. Simply stated, downtown needs more residents, and more residential density is needed to help support downtown businesses. The plan also recognized the city is running out of old buildings to remodel and focused on areas where new and dense residential construction should be directed.
The city council room was packed Wednesday night, and public comment lasted for hours as commissioners listened to those supporting and opposing the project. Those opposed highlighted the strain on services such as water, sewer, and roads, the social disruption to quiet neighborhoods, the size and appearance, and the environmental impact. Jeff Roy lives in the Old Town neighborhood. He is against the proposed property, saying the proffers don't go far enough to fix what the development will bring.
The proffers offered aren't going to mitigate our traffic problems, and the taxpayers are going to pay for it. Saying that we'll come back and fix the problem later when we figure out exactly what those problems are going to be, even though some of them could be predicted, is not going to take away from the fact that we as taxpayers are going to pay to fix that. And there's no proffer that's going to cover the cost of that.
Sam Nichols, a resident of Harrisonburg, supports the project. He says there is a lack of housing for low, middle, and high-income residents, which leads to a domino effect that impacts low-income residents the hardest.
And one thing that's important about this development is not that it will serve low-income people directly, but it will do so indirectly because it will take pressure off of the lowest income group by providing more housing for middle and upper income population.
Mark Faknix also lives in the Old Town neighborhood and opposes the project.
I heard the complaint that the building is ugly. It is a matter of taste. That may be. But there is a metric for big, and for the fact that six stories and its street-to-street sprawl would change access to sunlight, to the movement of air, to the percolation of rain, and the way people, residents and visitors, regard the approach to downtown.
Sarah Baker McEvely, owner of BMC Bakes in Harrisonburg, supports the project. She mentioned that in the last 2 years, 10 businesses have closed in downtown Harrisonburg, and having more residents downtown could help more businesses succeed.
One of the most important things we can do to support downtown businesses is simple. Allow for the development of more housing for the many people that desire to live downtown. Right now, there's an extreme shortage of apartments downtown. A healthy rental market typically has a vacancy rate of around 8%, which I'm sure you all know. Downtown rental vacancy rate is closer to 2%. Most units are rented nearly a year in advance, and prices continue to rise because supply simply isn't keeping up with demand.
The zoning request will now move forward to the City Council for its approval. For WMRA News, I'm Bridget Manley.
You can find photos and our previous coverage of the project at WMRA.org and on our app. State and local law enforcement agencies are warning the public about a growing danger: cryptocurrency fraud. Here in Virginia, they say the rate more than doubled between 2024 and 25. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman has details.
Last year, Virginians lost $350 million to scammers who called or texted them and convinced them to convert their money to Bitcoin. Marcus Baggett is a detective with the Albemarle County Police.
What we're seeing mostly is cash being deposited into a Bitcoin ATM, which we have many spread throughout here in the county and the city. A lot of these victims are elderly, and they are responding to a phone call threatening to them, impersonating law enforcement, impersonating a family member or friend who is in need.
Often these scammers are in other countries where large call centers operate. At the High-Tech Crimes Division of Virginia State Police, Adam Culpa says many people fail to report the crime promptly.
They're ashamed. They're like, how did I get scammed? They'll sit on it and they'll stew about it. And then they'll talk to a friend or family member. And then they'll finally say, you know what, maybe we should report it.
By then, he says, tracking the money and getting it back is much more difficult. One key, he adds, is to save any information about the transaction.
And fortunately, if you do put money into a Bitcoin ATM, it prints out a receipt with the address on there. So as long as they keep the receipts, we have a really good starting point.
Cases should be reported to local police, but Culpa says they'll need help from the state, since few local agencies have the expensive software, training, and personnel to investigate. I'm Sandy Hausman.
On to General Assembly news now. Leaders of the money committees are at an impasse over the budget, and the deadlock may derail the end of the session. Michael Pope with Virginia Public Radio has the latest from the Capitol.
Saturday is the last day of session, and lawmakers seem to be poised to walk away without a budget deal. Here's House Appropriations Chairman Luke Torian.
quite apparent that if we are not successful, we will have to come back.
The Senate budget gets rid of a huge tax exemption for data centers worth more than $1 billion. The House budget keeps the exemption, creating the deadlock. Here's Senate Finance Chairwoman Louise Lucas.
The budget that we've presented is structurally sound and balanced, and we need to make sure we got the funding to do that. And the best way to do that is for us to get some money from the data center reps. And that's what I'm working on.
The lawmakers are supposed to have 48 hours to review a budget proposal, but Senate Majority Leader Scott Sorvel says they can always suspend the rules.
That deadline is waivable. So in theory, if there was some kind of a breakthrough, I guess there's a theoretical possibility they could build a budget by Saturday, but it would seem to me it would take a lot of work.
House Speaker Don Scott says he's confident leaders of the money committees will strike a deal.
There's always a way. This is the legislative process. We've always had a way. We can make sure that we take care of the people's business in a timely fashion, and that's what we're trying to get done.
Now, lawmakers are scheduled to come back to Richmond in April, and the new fiscal year doesn't start until July the 1st, so they still have several months to cut a deal. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
Right now, higher education workers, including faculty members and all other university staff, are excluded from legislation allowing all public sector employees to collectively bargain. Megan Pauley with partner station VPM reports on the push to include them.
In December, six faculty members at Virginia State University were suddenly terminated and escorted to their cars by campus police when they declined to sign severance paperwork.
With a union, this would not happen.
That's Ian Mullins with the University of Virginia's chapter of United Campus Workers. He's been calling for their reinstatement and says the current legislation leaves university employees vulnerable. Virginia is among only a handful of states with a law on the books prohibiting public sector workers from organizing. A UVA spokesperson told VPM News the school established a $15 an hour base wage for all benefits eligible employees in 2020, but did not comment on its stance related to collective bargaining.
Megan Pauley reporting. With only days remaining in the 2026 legislative session, Virginia's Black Legislative Caucus is celebrating numerous wins, including changes to old laws they say marginalized Black and Brown voters. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner reports.
Our work on voting rights and ballot access has led to historic election turnout and to our ranking among the top 15 states of ease of voting.
That's Newport News Democratic delegate Sia Price, who worked to expand voting access in Virginia for years, but 2026 showed her and her colleagues are far from done. Initiatives include a new voter list maintenance law that creates a record for any canceled voter registration, raises confidence levels required to cancel registration, and requires notice before any registration is canceled. Price said the law change was required in the wake of former Governor Glenn Youngkin and Attorney General Jason Miaris' moves to purge voters ahead of the 2025 election.
Gone is the day of kicking folks off the voter rolls with no records or accountability.
Another effort requires Sunday voting ahead of elections, replacing a law that leaves it up to localities.
Ensuring that all voters have the chance to vote is key to increasing our voter turnout and ensuring the government is actually representative of those who live, work, and play in our Commonwealth.
While Latham is the election registrar for York County. He said his locality never expanded early voting to Sundays, but adds they're prepared to do so.
Thanks to the county, we have the resources, staffing, and space that we need to meet the requirements that the state has.
In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
The politics of data centers are dominating this General Assembly session. Michael Pope has more.
Where and when can data centers be built? How much information should a local government consider before making a zoning decision? And should they be exempt from taxes? These are lingering questions dominating the final days of the Virginia General Assembly's legislative session. Delegate John McAuliffe, a Democrat from Loudoun, has a bill to make sure future data centers are better for air quality.
It requires that all new builds, anything coming online, has to use Tier 4 lowest emissions generators. And that'll be the first time we do this in Virginia, and it's not the only thing we need to do to make sure that the communities that are living next to these things are safe, but it's a great first step.
His bill is already on its way to the governor's desk, but another bill is still caught up in discussions between the House and Senate. That bill would require local governments to consider specific details about data center proposals, and it was introduced by Delegate Josh Thomas, a Democrat from Prince William.
It requires data to be looked at before they make a decision at all, so we didn't affect their ability to do zoning decisions. All it says is they have to look at certain sound quality studies, if there's residential area nearby, and then also where is the energy infrastructure going, which has been a big issue for those of us in communities with lots of data centers.
And then there's the biggest unresolved issue involving data centers, a huge tax exemption worth more than $1 billion. The Senate wants to get rid of it, but the House is fighting to keep it, derailing the budget discussions heading into the final hours of the session this weekend. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
Rail transportation was not the hottest or most divisive issue during Virginia's legislative session, but lawmakers made a number of changes they say will help prepare the Commonwealth for expanded train travel in the coming years. Brad has the details.
My son has really started using the new Amtrak service to Roanoke. He's at Virginia Tech now.
That's Fairfax area Democratic delegate Marcus Simon, who successfully carried a technical fix for the Virginia Passenger Rail Authority, or VPRA.
He's able to get back and forth between Falls Church and Blacksburg by taking the train most of the way.
Simon's fix will make it easier for the agency created in 2020 to expand train travel in the Commonwealth to take land for new rail lines.
You know, nobody wants to have their land taken, but if it's going to happen, you want to have some predictability. You know what the process is, know what your rights are, know how to seek the maximum compensation you're entitled to.
Loudoun County Democratic delegate David Reed had another broader technical fix for the VPRA that put it more in line with other state transportation agencies. Reed said the changes
can really kind of maximize the whole transforming rail in Virginia.
DJ Statler, executive director of the VPRA, said the changes may seem minor, but once the new bridge between DC and Virginia, known as Long Bridge, opens, the law changes will be invaluable to rail expansion across the Commonwealth.
You'll see a lot more movement, not only up and down the 95 corridor, but at least out to Broad Run, if not further.
In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Well, as we've been reporting, the clock is ticking toward the scheduled end of the General Assembly session. But there's still a lot of unfinished business. Politics analyst Jeff Shapiro joins Michael to recap the week in politics and state government.
All right, a lot of news to get to this week, the last week of the legislative session for 2026. And Jeff Shapiro, it looks like these people are going to leave town without a budget deal, despite the fact that Democrats have the trifecta. They've got the governor's office, they've got the House and the Senate. Does this make it look like they don't know what they're doing?
Man, a bad look for one-party government. And, you know, those of us who've been around for a while recall that this has happened as well with Republicans. But they're not in charge now. It's the Democrats. And the big hang-up in this budget agreement between the House and the Senate is what to do about these tax credits for these energy-gobbling data centers. The House favors preserving these tax breaks. So does Governor Spanberger. She thinks it's important to preserving Virginia's pro-business climate. However, the Senate, behind Louise Lucas, the chair of its budget committee, wants to do away with these tax credits and use the $1.6 billion, nearly $2 billion in giveaways to pay for things like health services, education, public employee salaries. So when it comes to the budget, the General Assembly will be going into overtime.
Well, so the General Assembly has been meeting for 60 days, and they've considered hundreds of bills. What would you say is the major legacy of the 2026 legislative session?
Well, not reeling these off in terms of their importance, but certainly in terms of the number of headlines that they've generated. I think one has to start with redistricting, as we have been calling it, the Democrats gerrymandering the 11 congressional districts to produce 10 that are friendly to Democrats. All of this is pushed back to the Trump-initiated gerrymander that's intended to protect the Republican, slender Republican majority in the House. There's an assault weapon ban, a higher minimum wage. This is all part of the affordability package back backed by Governor Spanberger. That includes steps to expand the housing supply, including allowing localities first dibs on purchasing unused residential dwellings. Hey, how about a 1% voter-approved sales tax for local schools, expanding public employee unions, and then what about that commercial cannabis market?
So heading into the primary season, we're seeing all kinds of people throw their hats into the ring in terms of running for Congress. But Jeff Shapiro, I understand that one of them is a celebrity candidate?
I don't know how one could describe Dorothy McAuliffe otherwise, the First Lady, the wife of former Governor Terry McAuliffe. Dorothy McAuliffe, also a State Department employee in the Biden years. A key interest of Mrs. McAuliffe has been childhood nutrition. She wants to represent the new 7th district, which is now fully rooted in Northern Virginia, at least as far as the gerrymandering Democrats are concerned. But there's a growing field up there. And one of the candidates already announced is Dan Helmer, a member of the House of Delegates, one of Speaker Don Scott's enforcers. He's running a third time for Congress and wondering if it will prove the charm. By the way, Dorothy McAuliffe claims to have already raised $800,000 for her campaign. And among the endorsements she's boasting, one by Speaker Emeriti Nancy Pelosi, the great California Democrat.
Well, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Take care.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.